Deborah, with her 30 years of being an entrepreneur and creating over 7 companies, knows exactly what it means to accept the mission. When you make that decision, when you accept the mission to become a solopreneur, to take yourself and your talents to market, then you embrace a life of not only unlimited possibilities, but also the unknown. It's an elixir of fear and bravery that only someone who's taken the leap really understands. On our show, Deb digs deep with her guest to highlight what you, the listener, wants to know. The stories, the whys, and the hows to navigate the journey to success. Get ready to hear from some of the most incredible mission takers from Generation Z to Boomers. So sit up, perk up, and get ready to be blown away. Now here is your host, Deborah Drummond.
Hello and welcome back to another incredible episode. As you know, I always tell you you're something. I'm telling you often somehow. And today, let me see, you are the most entertained. You are the most entertained podcast audience today. I'm very excited to bring Darren Darnbara to the show today. And I think he might have a few words to say about media, maybe a little bit about entertainment, but we're going to have a great time together. And if you have landed on Mission Accepted today, because you thought that sounded like a great title, by the way, you're going to find out how Darren decided to take on the mission and why he stays on the mission. That's where the good stories come from, is when someone decides, I'm going to do something, and they think the big bravery comes in making that decision, and then the journey gets fun, and it also gets funky. And most of the time, my listeners, thank you so much. You share and post and comment, and you really tell me what you need. And I love how you are sharing. And as you know, we are also going global and doing some really cool live shows, and you'll see all that. But anyways, that being said, thank you for being here today, Darren, and welcome to Mission Accepted Podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Darren, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do and share with us a little bit about how you decided to do it? I was looking on your things this morning and I didn't quite catch the story, or maybe your story, of how you ended up doing what you're doing.
Well, that's interesting, because sometimes I don't even know what I do and I find it hard to explain. But there's, because traditionally we would explain what we do as being our job or our career. Mine's shifted in a few different directions, but also kept consistent in the main things that I do, which is, from a young age, I've always been an actor. Mm-hmm. And from a young age, I've always been very interested in business and entrepreneurship. And I've managed to somehow do them both concurrently at the same time throughout my life. And now, you know, being 20, 25 years older than that teenage boy, I see that I have consistently done that. And it's not really flipped and flopped, but I've managed to keep both of those tracks running. And I used to struggle with that part of it, feeling like, shouldn't I focus on one thing or the other? And actually, I'm now very comfortable knowing that I like both. I'm good at both, and that's fine.
Well, I think that, you know, when people used to, we've had that conversation, and people like, you know, if you just do one thing, and it's like, you know, for a lot of creatives, and I know I am one, there's a lot of creatives that come on the show. Let's face it, whatever industry you're on that you're or in that you are creating, whether it's accounting or whether it's on the screen like you've done, I always tell people I'm a creative. I happen to create businesses, or I happen to create my company, or I happen to create, but it's the creative mind. I mean, someone called me an entrepreneur and I'm like, okay, I'll take it. That's great. There's a title for people that do more than one thing at one time. But I think that if you have a mission, and your mission, you can have one mission and do it many different ways. But I too struggled a little bit with, hey, maybe if you just focused on one thing. And I'm like, but I'm a creative and my brain doesn't work that way. And my job is to be satisfied in my soul. So I don't want to do just one thing and feel a yearning over here. And I talked about it actually on a summit earlier this morning. They were talking to me about business. And I said, you know, a lot of people used to do a full-time job and a part-time job. And a lot of times their part-time job was more fun and they wanted their part-time job to be their full-time job. And now we have this world of entrepreneurship where side gigs are turning into their full-time gigs. And why can't you have pleasure from two things?
Well, and the interesting thing about what you just said there is no one really does one thing. Even if you have one career and one salary and one job, you still have your off time. You still have your hobbies. You still have your weekends and your vacations and things like that, your family. No one does one thing all the time. And I think if you're entrepreneurially minded, you have a lack of that desire to have one job. And you usually do enjoy what you do. So actually your leisure time becomes your work time and they all intermingle. But it's really sort of a bit disingenuous for anyone to say they do one thing. We all go to the gym or hang out or watch TV or sleep or, you know, all these different areas of your life. And I think an entrepreneur just masters those different areas and compartmentalizes them or not, depending on how good they are, and does all those things concurrently in the same way most people do different areas of their life concurrently.
Yeah, no, well said, well said. Well, you know, great observation. I know that, let's talk a little bit more. So you talked about being an actor from a teenager. I mean, let's talk about that because you said, I know that you act, obviously I was watching you this morning and it was amazing. And also you have this company that's kind of in the same vein. And you say that you've been entrepreneurial, you know, pretty consistently in both. Has it always been the same or did you have something entrepreneurial that wasn't necessarily in your industry? Maybe tell us a little backstory.
Yeah, I did have various entrepreneurial pursuits that I would say they've always been industry adjacent looking back. And at the time, some of them didn't feel. But when I look at the whole picture, where I'm from, I'm from a small town in North London. Having a career as an actor, which is what I was interested in when I was, you know, school, early teens, I realized it was something I was good at in the same way that many people do just through doing it at school or on their weekend extracurricular kind of things. But it never felt like a viable career. It's, you know, and I'm a product of that negative talk that you get around things that you want to do that no one ever makes it or it's tough, all those things. And so in my head, I always needed a backup plan, or not even a backup plan, just another thing to do at the same time. And studying was one of them. And I got my, you know, my qualifications and then went to college and all those things. But all this, at the same time, I was always acting. And I started doing local amateur dramatics like many people do. The shift happened when I was actually asked to be in, or I was given the opportunity to be a background artist in a commercial that my head teacher at school knew the producer of. And he knew that me and my friend were like the actor kids at school. We were always in all the school shows. And he gave us the afternoon off to go because he thought it'd be a great experience. And that really sort of changed my perspective because it was a professional set. We were just, you know, showing up to be in the background. I think I was like 14, 15. But the lead guy in it, who was also the same age as me, he had his own TV show. He was a legitimate TV star that we watched as kids. It was the sort of show you'd watch when you get home from school. So he was a teenage hero. And we found out from talking to him on set that he lived in our area. And so we started hanging out with him as a friend, just playing on our bikes, things like that. And through him, I learned about agents. I learned about acting classes in the evening because he was, even though he's our age, he had an agent. He was on TV. And he took us to his class one evening that was run by his agent. And that changed my perspective because I was in a room of several people that I'd seen on television. And I got up and acted with them. And I was like, wow, this is something you can do as a career. Not that I didn't know that. It just wasn't in my immediate realm.
Right.
And then through that, I got representation with a different agent that ran an acting class. I had two auditions, booked my second one, which was a Dr. Pepper commercial, got paid a lot of money for it at the age of 16. And that really, not like a crazy amount of money, but way more than what your regular part-time job was paying. I was on a professional set in a professional studio around other actors that are professional. And I was like, wow, actually this could be a career. And then my perspective shifted into it being a viable career, but still a tough one, where I know I'm not going to make a consistent income, all those things. And for perspective, yes, I booked the second audition, professional audition I did. It was another 40 before I booked the next job. So that was beginner's luck in a way. And that sort of set the path for me thinking I need another career to go alongside of it. And what I remember deciding at an early age is it had to be something flexible, because I knew I wanted to make myself available for this career. And I very quickly saw people lose opportunities because they couldn't get the day off work, or because they were, you know, had these other obligations. So I decided I needed entrepreneurship because it's the only thing that I can call the shots on. And that's when I started to look for things that were at bare minimum contract work. It's not like I've never had a regular job, but it would always be on a contract basis where I would decide each day if I was saying yes or no to that job. Or it would be things that were commission-based, so I could decide how hard I worked at it or not. And I would reap the rewards based upon my effort. And then that sort of led into various entrepreneurial endeavors. And when we get back to that thing of, have they always been entertainment related? Kind of. One of the first sort of quote unquote businesses I ran was a nightclub promotion company where we would promote nightclub nights, you know, getting people to come to your event, classic. But I was doing the sort of celebrity clubs, the ones that you couldn't get into, but you could if you knew the right person. And it was structured as a business. We, you know, we had targets to hit and clients and all those things, but it was, of course, entertainment adjacent, because what those nightclubs really wanted from me was my actor friends, my model friends to come to their club. And then I also ran from doing a lot of brand ambassador work, which is kind of the promotional stuff, the modeling that you do at exhibitions, pretty people handing out free things. I did a lot of that work in between the acting work, which many, many actors do. Many models do that because it's flexible. And that was my first successful company, really, that I built around that industry, which was getting actors that were not working work in another industry that was adjacent to what they were doing and use their skills. And so I built a company called Stuck for Staff, which was a software as a service platform, a SaaS business, as they're now called, which we didn't know that was called it then because there weren't many subscription businesses out there. Right. This is back in the early 2000s. I did this, and it was it's a recruitment platform which matched people in a marketplace that they now call it, of staff that work in that industry. And we end up having the largest database of those staff in the country for sure, but probably the world.
Oh my goodness. Well, and we might as well lead right into what you're doing now.
Yeah.
Because it sounds similar, but not. Why don't we share with the audience what it is that you're doing now?
Yeah. So right now I started a company called We Audition, and it's been running for about 9 years now. What We Audition is a platform, a marketplace, a SaaS business, a subscription as a service business. See the theme here? That helps actors find scene partners to do their auditions. So it's very, very niche. My last business was also very niche. But this one operates on a similar model, really. It's a similar structure. And one of the reasons I like these types of businesses is they're technically infinitely scalable, depending on how many customers you can reach. And so when we had the idea for the problem, which was how do actors find someone to read their lines with, it made sense to me to apply that old business model that I built, which, by the way, we rebuilt from scratch. It's not a technology you could really apply, but the concepts I applied over. I deal with different people and that kind of thing, but the concept we applied over, which is an international marketplace of people wanting to help each other out on demand. So what We Audition is basically like an Uber for actors, but through video chat. So when you need an actor, you log on and you pick someone that's available right now to come on a video chat like we're doing now to help you read your scripts. And what you're getting is a professional, qualified, reviewed actor that understands the business, that can help you out. And if you're not in the acting world, if you're not in entertainment, you might say, well, why is that necessary? Well, there's been a few shifts in recent years. Acting has largely gone from an in-person audition process where you go to an appointment in an office, like you've seen Joey from Friends do, and wait in line and go for your appointment and read with the person in the office. It's largely gone into a system where you tape yourself on your iPhone or your camera and you send it in, which means you no longer have the other person who would be the casting director or the casting's assistant. And that created a burden on the actor to not only have to set up their lights and their camera and everything, but also have somebody there to read with them, do the other lines. What most people end up doing was asking their roommate, asking their girlfriend, asking their mom. And that's not the best person for the job. It works, but it's not the best person. And so I was looking at, well, I was having that issue and I lived in Hollywood. I lived in an apartment building of about 30 to 40 apartments where probably half of them were actors. I know loads of people in Hollywood and I still found it tough to find someone to do that with me at the time I needed, you know, a convenient time for me. And so I was like, if I'm having this problem where I live in the most actor-centric place in the world, in the middle of a city that every second person is an actor, what is someone in Nebraska feeling? What is somebody in Indonesia or on a smaller island feeling? Like, who do they ask? And so that's how the system was born, is let's connect actors around the world to help each other out through this marketplace.
I love that story for many reasons. One is we hear over and over again, you know, find a solution to a problem that exists. And many people miss opportunities unless it's really a part of their inner world. And then the concern is, yeah, it's my problem. It's my industry's problem. Is it big enough? Is it scalable? Mm. And how do you scale? So, I mean, that's a whole other conversation, which...
Well, I can answer those questions really quickly. We often get asked, I hear the statement, I can't believe no one thought of this before.
Right.
And it's interesting when someone says that to me, because firstly, usually I say, you know, we've been doing it for 9 years. They're like, wow, no, I didn't. So firstly, they think it's newer than it is. Secondly, why did no one think of it before? Because imagine the skill set it needs to build an e-commerce platform like this, and the desire and the drive, but to also know the problem exists at an intricate level and understand the market you're talking to. Not many people fit that mold that can do both of those things. And here's the rub, that want to. So there'll be many people thinking, oh, I wish there was something like this and wouldn't do it. There'll be many people with a skill set that wouldn't even know the problem existed.
Yeah.
And then if you take the few that have both those skill sets, the desire and the drive and the hard work it takes to launch, that takes most people out. So you're niching on your niche. And then the other part of, like, you know, find a solution to a problem. I do agree that's one of the best ways of business. But all of the businesses I've run, especially this one and the last one, I was fixing a problem that people didn't even know they had. And that is part of the struggle of a new business, and also the challenge and the exciting thing. And so you'll hear a lot of business advice out there that will say to you, you know, make sure you go out and market test your product before you build anything, before ask people, do they want it? If I'd have asked people if they wanted this, they would have probably said no, because to them, their dad or their boyfriend is good enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They don't know they need a different solution. And then there's a bunch of people beyond that their problem wasn't, who do I get to read? Their problem was, I need more auditions. So they're coming from a place of scarcity anyway. So someone saying, hey, if this existed, would you use this? They're coming from a place where I don't even have enough auditions to think about that. But I want that person to be part of my business 4 years later when they are in a place where they need that. And so really with this business, we had to just be confident and build it. It's one of those build it and they will come. And I always loved that quote. I don't know if this is a true quote or it's one of those internet memes that goes around, but I like it regardless. Apparently, Henry Ford said, if I'd have asked the people what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. Right?
Oh, yeah, true.
Because they didn't know they needed a car.
And I think that's with a lot of businesses, you don't know you need it. You don't know you need it. You don't know you need it till it's there. And you could probably walk around your kitchen alone and find things that you produce or find things that you use. And we don't think, when I'm using this kitchen tool, I'm scaling. Do you know what I mean? Like, the first person to think of a potato peeler, like, well, what's wrong with the knife?
What's wrong with the knife? Right. Why do you need a specific thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
But until someone nails it down, and then, you know, my goodness, like the story of the woman who made whiteout, right? Just a teacher looking to create something to cover mistakes. And, you know,
Right.
gosh knows, I'm sure her bank account is a plenty. I would just say it's a
yeah.
plenty. It's
yeah.
not knowing.
I met the person whose grandfather created cat's eyes. You know, those little things in the road that light up, the reflective
Oh, my
studs.
goodness.
And it's like, you wouldn't wake up one day and think, oh my gosh, I wish there was some reflective studs in the road so I could see where I was going. No one asked for that, you know?
No one asked for that, but he
and
probably had that
everywhere
idea.
Everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's taking that idea. And for some of us that are creative, it's deciding which idea. You know what I mean? Like this project that we're in right now, I go, look at it, was divine. It was, no one sits around a table and goes, you know, let's do this. It was something that we, you know, I heard, I thought, it came to me, and then it unfolded on its own.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about your acting life.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think people find that they're drawn to the entertainment industry. They want to know about the industry. But then when you get to hear someone who's actually in it, thank you for sharing that you had that audition and then you didn't have another one for, you know, for 40, it didn't hit. And all the myths or maybe half truths, or maybe they are true about your industry. How long have you been, would you say you've been professionally acting since your Dr. Pepper?
Yeah. I've been professionally acting since 16. And my qualification of professionally acting, every single year I've earned money from acting.
Yeah.
Since then. That's my personal definition of professional, is you get paid for it. I know there's various definitions. Some people think a professional attitude is enough. That's not my definition. My definition is someone hiring me to be an actor. Has there been slower years and busier years? Yes, but consistently every single tax return has had acting income on it. So I consider myself a full-time minded professional actor.
Well, I was watching you this morning and it was amazing. I mean,
I'm
a sucker for an Irish accent anytime. So we'll probably watch twice.
Can
as
I
long.
Do the rest of this this interview in Irish then?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Share with us maybe something about your acting that was a magical moment for you. Whether it's a magical moment or something that was a bit of a surprise, you know, I think that there's these promises, if you work hard, you'll make it through, or if you keep going, you'll make it through. And then there's these moments that even surprise ourselves. I've had moments in my business where I was like, oh, I didn't see that one coming, but that was amazing. And it didn't have to be grand, and it didn't have to be, you know, the highlight of my whole, you know, 10, 20, 30 year career. But it was a moment that I was like, I mean, I remember in one of my companies, it was really about it was fine to be on stage and I'd been on stage, but there was someone in my team that really wanted to walk across the stage. And I remember just the smile inside when she finally got news that her name was, you know, going to be called. And it just was a magical moment for me, or meeting someone that I never, ever, ever, you know, I grew up listening to a band called Headpins, and I'm a big Janis Joplin fan. And she was, Darby Mills was the Janis Joplin of Canada. And just having her in my living room and having that conversation. And then last week, and just, you know, going up and giving her a book and having a 10, 15 minute conversation on a porch as she was heading back to the studio. Like those magical moments that you can't see. Is there anything that for you is like, I didn't see that one coming, but man, that was worth it.
You know what, for the acting industry, I'm finding it hard to find one of those, because I feel like my career has been pretty consistent and pretty underwhelming in that sense. You hear a lot of people about that one job that changed their life. Like, I know like a friend of mine, he was a pretty consistent actor, but the job that changed his life was The Walking Dead, and he became a top character on that. And I remember him literally, his Instagram post was, my last day before my life is going to change. And I didn't even know, he wasn't allowed to talk about it, but that was his post. And then the next day he got announced as this new character. I haven't had one of those moments. It's been pretty consistent, normal. All I can share is it's a journey. It's a long journey. I've stayed in it. I've stayed consistent. Nothing's really sort of stood out as this magical moment. even when I moved to America, it wasn't like America called for me and Hollywood brought me here. I went through a process of getting a visa, 2-year process of setting that up and then moving over and reestablishing myself here and having to like do the grunt work again. So there's no little popped off magical moment. On the other side, on the entrepreneurial side, I've had some, you know, and listen, look, I've met different celebrities and I've had worked with some heroes of mine and stuff like that, but nothing's been like that. Oh, wow. On the entrepreneurial side, I've definitely had some of those moments.
Oh, well, do share.
You know, and this is a lovely example of when you come from a place of giving true value and when you come from a place of genuine interest, then some interesting things happen. My hero growing up was not a footballer. I wasn't into football. Kind of was obsessed with Mariah Carey, but we'll leave that one for another time. But not even in the way that people are obsessed with TV stars or pop stars. Who I was kind of mildly obsessed with was Richard Branson. I loved his story. I read his books. I always thought, you know, this guy's a hero. And I think one of the things that appealed to me about him was he does lots of things. No one put him in a box. And I would get that criticism from you. Well, you want to be an actor, or you want to be a graphic? Because at one point I wanted to be a graphic designer. I was like, I can do both. I mean, it's graphic design, it's acting. What's wrong with you? And people were like, oh, yeah, you got to focus on this or you'll never make it. And I thought, this guy does. He does planes, he does trains, he does mobile phones, he does records. No one's telling him what to do.
Yeah.
But of course, he's already there. In my little teenage brain, I guess if you'd have asked me back then, I don't know if I'd have said this, but I probably secretly thought, I'm going to meet him one day. One day I'll meet him. This is how I met him. In Hollywood, opposite the Chinese theater where the Oscars, or the Kodak Theater where the Oscars are held, mm-hmm. at the famous Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, I got a tap on my shoulder and he said, are you Darren? And I turned around and said, yes, Richard Branson. He's like, this is the best party I've ever been to. Thank you. That was a magical moment.
That is a magical moment.
And because I thought at some point I'll meet him, but that I would never have expected it to be in that way. And a little later on that evening, his driver told me that he'd said the same thing to him. So I knew it was genuine. And the context of that, I want to tell you the story of how that came to be, because that's the interesting part. I've moved to LA, as I explained, done all the research and all the plans and gone through the very legal immigration process, which is tough. Even from someone from England, you have to go through a bunch of hoops to get here and be able to work here. And I was only allowed to work as an actor. That was what my condition was. So I came here you have to kind of start your career again a little bit. You got to get known. I had an agent and stuff, but you know, you got to get the auditions. And remember I told you I was running events at nightclubs. Mm-hmm. I was obviously not going to do that here because that's a different job, but I thought, well, I want to keep those skills up. So I really would like to do it in some way. So I volunteered for charities to give them my knowledge. That was going to be my plan, to volunteer. And then I was going to an event in Beverly Hills and I was meeting my friend there and she told me roughly where it was, but hadn't told me exactly the address. And so I come into this little street of a few little shops and I see what looked like an event going on in a jewelry store. And I'm thinking that this must be it. And there's a man on the door in a suit and a clipboard. And I walked up and he said, are you here for the event? And I was like, yep. And he's like, oh, come on in. Okay, come on in. So my friends text me, where are you? And I'm like, I'm inside the event. She's like, I don't see you. And I'm stood there. By this point, I've been handed a free glass of champagne. And I'm thinking, this is awesome. I've been in LA for like 3 weeks. And I'm like, I'm at a party in Beverly Hills. I have a free glass of champagne. Life's already good. And whilst I'm texting my friend trying to figure out where she is, this lady gets up on stage, an elderly lady, and she starts talking about something. And everyone turns to look and I couldn't quite figure out what she's talking about. She starts talking about Morocco and these, you know, the Berber people. And she kept saying, and my son built this hotel there. And I said, you know, we've really got to sell the local products in the store. And he's like, well, mummy, I don't have the space. And she's like, Richard, listen, you're going to do this. I'm going to make. And she goes, one thing is, doesn't matter if your son's a billionaire. Doesn't matter if he's the biggest businessman in the world. He listens to his mother. And I was like, oh my God, that's Richard Branson's mom. And I was like, huh, because I've read about her. I've read his description of her, her voice, her manner, everything. And I was like, that's interesting. So now I'm in this private event. Branson's mum's on stage talking. And I finally get the gist that she's galvanizing a charity event. And this was like the announcement of the charity event they're going to do in order to raise money for the local people in the area of where he built his latest hotel. And I was like that. And it was very captivating, empowering story. So after she got down off the little stage, I walked straight over and said, hey, that was amazing. How can I help? And she said, oh, you want to help? Go and speak to that man over there. And that man was the sort of chair of the charity. So I went over and spoke to this guy, Tim, and said, I'm new in town. Love to help. How can I help? He said, come to this meeting next week. And by the meeting next week, I joined the committee of this charity, which was doing a massive gala. 4 or 5 weeks later, there I was saying hello to Charlize Theron, to Jewel was our performer, and Richard Branson comes into the event on horseback. And I'd contributed a significant amount to that, the planning of that event. And I brought in all my resources and all my advice. And that's why Richard came over. He found me and said, thank you. Which is, you know, testament to him. There was a big committee and he didn't need to pick me out that personally either. So, and that to me is a great entrepreneur, you know. And it's funny because over the next couple of years, I bumped into him at an airport in the line where you put your stuff through security. Uh-huh. I had a private lunch with him through another entrepreneur's group. And so I intersected with a guy like 4 or 5 times in the next 2 years. It's been a very interesting, I guess you can call it manifesting in some way, but yeah, that's the magical moment. And so I'm going to like wrap this little story up with the piece of advice. Sometimes people ask me, what's the best bit of advice anyone's ever given you? And it was the most simple, but sort of profound. I was at this dinner of 10 to 12 top entrepreneurs. I had put the logistics of the event together. The guy that's arranging it wasn't from LA, needed to find a good venue. He wanted a private dining room with a back entrance, sort of secret and all these things. I said, I know a few places. Let me make some calls. We set up this lunch and I was sort of expecting Richard Branson not to be there. This guy told me, I was like, I don't think he's going to, you know, it sounds a bit far-fetched. And at 12 o'clock, he walks in with Sharon Stone. And the 10 other people was Noel Lee from Monster Cable that then went on to do Beats by Dre. It was Steve Celine, the race car driver that does the Ford Celine. It's like people at the top of their game. Eric Roberts was there. And we had this lunch and we all got to ask Richard Branson a question. And he, you know, I remember Steve Celine talking about electric cars and driving. And there was this long drawn out conversation that was fascinating, but it's very illustrious. Got to me and my question was, I get criticized for doing too many things. I'm an actor. I run a business. I find that criticism. You do a lot of things. When is the right time? And I was going through a point when I was thinking I might want to stop one of my businesses and I wasn't sure. And I said to him, when is the right time to put something down that you're working on? And he sat there and he took a pause and the room was silent. And I'm thinking, you're going to say something? Do you want me to follow up the question? And he really considered it. And then he gave me an answer that I felt cheated on. And it wasn't until probably a couple of weeks later, I was like, no, that was profound. His answer was, when it stops being fun, who's next? And I thought that's all we've just heard, this illustrious answer for the last guy, but the length of time he considered it, I was like, those words were very thoughtful and it's very on brand for him. Mm-hmm. And you know what, he's right. Why am I doing something if it's not fun? Mm-hmm. There's many ways to make money. Mm-hmm. There's many ways to advance your career. What? And I was like, wow, that is profound actually. And I take that statement with me in everything I do now. I use it to influence decisions. I tell it to other people because, you know, not everything has to be fun 100% all of the time, right? We know that. But if you look at the whole big picture and you go, am I enjoying this? You know, over a period?
Mm-hmm.
And if the answer is no versus yes, of course there's fluctuation. But if the general answer is no, get on with something else. Life's too short.
I love that. I love that. It reminds me of a similar question that I asked someone that I had great respect for in business when I was trying to dance between two and I was on a trade of event in one company and there was an issue going on with the other and I was just at a brink. He goes, love the one you're with. I was like,
love the one you're with.
Love the one you're with. I was there in that business. He's like, it'll be fine. But I love that story. I love that story. Look, I know it's time to wrap up and we could talk and we will talk and we'll do lots of talking. There's a couple of things that I know that you got going on that I would love to share with our audience.
Yeah, please.
One is you've got something going up for an Emmy right now. Why don't you share what that is so we can double down and support what that looks like?
Absolutely. I believe the nominations come out tomorrow, actually, on the 17th of July. So I was in a project called Razor. It's a dystopian sci-fi series available on Gala Film, which is a streaming platform. It was in the consideration for the Emmys. And so we'll find out tomorrow if we're nominated.
Wow.
And if we are, then great. I'm a TV Academy member. I'm an Emmy member. So I go to the Emmys each year. It'd be really lovely to be in a project that is nominated. So by the time this podcast comes out, we'll know if we are or we're not. But either way, the viewers can watch that on Gala Film. If you Google Gala Film, G-A-L-A, and then you'll see that project Razor.
Okay.
And I have a new film coming out on September 27th in theaters nationwide called Abruptio. And it's a puppet horror movie with Jordan Peele and Hannah Mae Lee and James Masters. It's going to be a very unique, interesting horror. It's like nothing you've seen before. The trailer's up. So if you Google Abruptio, A-B-R-U-P-T-I-O, you'll see the trailer. It's wild. And I really mean like it's like nothing you've ever seen. It's a very unique concept. It's a movie that's made with lifelike, life-sized puppets. They look like people, they act like people, but they're puppets.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Just to see how that's done would be interesting to watch.
Right, exactly. Because, you know, you used to, puppets like Jim Henson and Cragger Rock, and then you're used to animation, but this is sort of a blender too. It's like the uncanny valley. They look like people enough, but just not quite. And so that's a really interesting project. And that actually took, quite a few years to finish and come out. So that's really exciting. And I have another project, which I'm one of my favorite roles today. It's called River of Grass. And it will be premiering at the Holly Shorts Festival at the famous Chinese Theater, full circle, back to that venue. And that will be premiering in the next few weeks there. And we'll be doing the film festival circuit with that. So that's some exciting stuff. And then through my company, we also just launched a podcast, We Audition Show, taking a leaf out of your books. So
tell us where we can find that show.
The We Audition Show is on all the platforms that you find podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube as well, and on weaudition.com/show. And I would say if your listeners are interested in the journey of actors and creatives, it seems like they are, then that's a really good place for us. We really drill down into what makes those actors' careers successful and the things you need to do in order to be a success in the entertainment business.
That's fantastic. Well, look, I have one last question for you. I'm going to take us off topic a little bit. When people ask me how I've been an entrepreneur for so long or how I've gotten through life, and I don't know how you've gotten through life, what is your one thing that you like? It's my baseline. It makes everything okay. It's like the biggest Band-Aid ice cream, in the world for me. And that's music. I just don't know there's just not a day in my life that I don't listen to a lot of music. If I'm ever late for a meeting, Darren, it's because I'm listening to a new band. I'll just be completely honest with you. So my question to you is, a radio station calls you, someone you don't know, and says, And you have won 2 backstage pass tickets to the concert of your choice, a concert you've never been to before. Who's the band that you would want 2 backstage passes to go see that you've never had an opportunity to see yet?
Oh, I mean, do I have a time machine? It would be the Beatles.
Beatles?
Yeah, absolutely. I did see Paul McCartney, which was great, but the Beatles.
Beatles. Good answer. Good answer. Well, look, thank you so much for sharing. Your stories today were amazing. It's such a pleasure to meet you. I know that I'll be seeing you in LA when we go down there to be gifting out the book and Ocean doing his thing. And
absolutely.
Let us know when the package arrives. But until then, I hope you're well. And audience, as you're listening, if you want to be sitting where Darren is and you want to be telling us your stories and your passion and your profit, nonprofit, whatever it is that you're doing, then we would love to support you. We'd love to have your mission accepted. And until then, Darren, thank you. And audience, you're amazing. Be well and stay great. Bye for now.
Thank you so much for having me.